I think we're going to go ahead and get started. There may be a few stragglers coming in. My name is Marie Fisher. I'd like to welcome you to the Women on Wednesday series, Still Fighting for Our Rights 30 Years Later. A few housekeeping items before we get started. Please turn off all cell phones and pagers, and please stay in your seats until 12:50. Also, if you could please fill out the evaluation sheet, as we do use this information for future programming. 2007 marked the 35th anniversary of the Title IX. The landmark legislation passed in 1972 prohibiting sex discrimination in all areas of education. This presentation will address the impact, the numbers, the reactions, and the benefits of Title IX, specifically as it relates to women in sports at the collegiate level. Dr. Susan Becker has been the Associate Director of Athletics, Senior Women's Administrator at St. Cloud State since December of 2005, and is responsible for directing the internal and compliance operations of the SCSU Athletic Department. She has served as an associate professor in the Department of Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Sports Science. Dr. Becker received a bachelor's degree from the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and a master's from Emporia State University. She has a doctorate degree from Oregon State University. Dr. Lori Alfertz has been the head women's basketball coach at St. Cloud State since 1994 and is in her 23rd season as a collegiate head coach. Dr. Alfertz has won over 370 games in her coaching career. She has a bachelor's degree from the University of North Dakota and a master's from Frostburg University in Maryland. She received her doctorate in educational administration from the University of North Dakota, has been inducted into both University of Minnesota Crookston and University of North Dakota Athletic Halls of Fame. She is a professor in the Department of Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Sports Science. We are very grateful to have them both here today. Please join the Women's Center in welcoming Dr. Susan Becker and Dr. Lori Alfertz.
Good afternoon. I'm Sue Becker, and I give a little background. It says that I'm the Associate Athletic Director, but I've been here at St. Cloud since 1984. I came in as the Assistant Volleyball Coach, Head Softball Coach. I coached for 10 years, and then I became the Athletic Compliance Coordinator, and I did that for 10 years. So this is my 23rd year at St. Cloud. I played high school athletics. I was a college athlete in volleyball at University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. So Title IX has been real important to both Lori and I, and she'll give her background as well. Starting before Title IX, seeing the changes over the 35 years has been impressive, incredible in places, and disappointing in others. When we start today, you see what the law actually says. The law says, no person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any education programs activity receiving federal financial assistance. That's the law. Any educational program. But when we think of Title IX, we often think that it only affects athletics. And nowhere on their Title IX statement does it say athletics. It affects any educational program. So some of the places that we're seeing right now besides athletics would be at the university level, tenure decisions. How many women professors are full professors? Is it different for a woman to be tenured than a male professor? Those are questions that are asked often on our campus. Another area that is really starting to come about is in the elementary schools. We're talking now more about having same-sex classrooms, that girls will learn more and maybe better if they are not with the boys at the elementary level, and boys may also learn better in math and sciences. And so there may start to be some same-sex classrooms. That separate but equal is where Title IX is going to come into play. And so those are concerns that we have to be thinking about, be aware of, that it does affect more than athletics. But we're here to talk about Title IX and how it affects athletics. Chronology. Just a little, some very quick. Holly, I hope you're with me. 1972, it's enacted. It isn't until 75 that it actually becomes law. Gives the regulations gave elementary schools 1 year, secondary schools and colleges 3 years to come into compliance. And it was primarily 3 years was for the athletics, the sports aspect. So it's not until 1978 that Title IX comes into effect. In 1976, the NCAA files a lawsuit to challenge Title IX regulations. They don't win. So what happens is the NCAA was a men's sports, and we had such a thing called AIAW, Association of Intercollegiate Athletics for Women, AIAW. That's what Lori and I played in college. 1982 was the last year of AIAW. Two things happened. In 1982, AIAW folded. One was there were a number of lawsuits in the sport of gymnastics that really caused financial concerns for the AIAW. And the second thing is the NCAA says, if we couldn't beat them, we'll take them in. And so in 1983, the NCAA started offering women's championships. And when they started offering women's championships, they were willing to help pay for some of those championships. And so, again, AIAW could not handle that financially between the lawsuits of the gymnastics and then the strength of the NCAA. So in 1983, we now have NCAA association that is for both men's and women's sports. In 1984, Grove City versus Bell is a lawsuit that takes place. U.S. Supreme Court decision held that federal spending clause statutes only apply to those programs that directly receive the federal financial assistance, which means that in athletics does not actually receive federal financial assistance. The university, the institution does. And so in 1984, when this case came down from the Supreme Court, it pretty much said, Title IX is dead. And that's how we felt. I started at St. Cloud State in 84, and that's how we felt, was Title IX no longer survived based on this ruling. But then in 1988, we have the Civil Rights Restoration Act. Congress passes the Civil Rights Restoration Act over Reagan's veto. And in this situation, what it said was that it restored that the institution who received federal financial assistance was held to Title IX regulations, and so it also then at that point put sports athletics back into the Title IX regulations. In 1992, there's another case that takes place, Franklin versus Gwinnett County. Again, it goes to the Supreme Court. Decision that Title IX plaintiffs are entitled to receive monetary damages for discrimination. This is the first time with Title IX legislation that if you sued, you could receive monetary damages. Before, what the Office of Civil Rights, who was overseeing Title IX regulations, they threatened to take away federal financial assistance. Since 1972, the Office of Civil Rights has never taken away any institution's federal financial assistance. So there's no teeth in the law. There is no teeth at all. In 92, it changes. This Supreme Court ruling now said, schools, if you get sued, punitive damages. Compensation can be given to the plaintiff. And that changed everything. That's when you started to see some things happening. 95, draft of the OCR Title IX clarification. The Office of Civil Rights oversees Title IX. They're the ones who are supposed to come in and investigate. And yet the Office of Civil Rights, probably their caseload is about 2% involves Title IX and athletics. So they don't really, at this time, they didn't have any policies in place, clarification. They didn't really know how to come in and investigate and what to be looking for. So there were some clarifications put in, and the three-part test to try to help explain how do you stay within compliance of Title IX. 1996, this is the first time that we call it the EADA. It's the Equity and Athletics Disclosure Act report is due. And in this October of 96, is when colleges and universities had to start reporting to the Department of Education financial revenue and expenses for men's programs versus the women's sports programs. It doesn't go across teams, it goes across programs. So on St. Cloud State campus, we have 11 women's sports, we have 10 men's sports. When I do the report every year, I count up all the revenues and all the expenses by men's sports, by women's sports, and we are supposed to be having an equitable amount of money going to the women's teams versus the and men's teams. And I'll go into that in a little bit more detail when I go into the three-part test. In 2003, again, we start to have a few problems. Title IX commission is put together by President Bush. And he's asking for a panel to look at should there be some changes to Title IX. And it was a huge, huge issue because most of the people on the panel were anti-Title IX. It was done intentionally. Maybe I'm biased. It was done to try to water down Title IX regulations. And the majority report did want to water it down. However, there was a minority report that was also produced, and Senator Hillary Clinton put it into the congressional record, so it was public. And as a result of this controversy, nothing was changed on Title IX. But it was tried. It was clearly, clearly tried. So that's just a quick chronology of the history of where we've been in 35 years, but where we're at now with some current trends, current issues. In 2007, there was a case, Jackson versus Birmingham Board of Education. It was a male girls' basketball coach in Alabama who complained that his basketball team wasn't getting the same practice times, money, was being discriminated against in comparison to the boys' team. And I am surprised when I read the article in 2007 of how bad this girls' basketball team was treated, how discriminatory it still is in some places. They were not getting the money from the booster club. They were not allowed to practice on the competitive court. They had to find their own way to get to away games. It was just horrendous is what I was hearing in some of these articles. He filed a lawsuit. As a result of filing a lawsuit, his performance evaluations went down, and he was fired. At the time, in Title IX, there was nothing about retaliation. And in fact, because he was a male coaching a girls' team, he wasn't within the class that was the underrepresented sex. And so the lower court said, you don't fit in. We can't support this lawsuit. It went to the Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision. He came back and said, that's retaliation. They didn't say he'd get his job back, but they did say, we've got to have Title IX regulations be very broad in their nature so that we can protect the underrepresented sex. And in this situation, just because it was a male coach filing this suit, he should have been protected, some under the employment law of Title VII, but that Title IX also would help there. He was able to get his job back. They did change a number of things. But in 2007, that's still going on. That, to me, was very scary. The second thing that happened just recently was James Madison University. Out east, out in Virginia, they have 28 sports. They have a $22 million budget. They could not continue to fund the sports that they wanted to, so what they chose to do is cut 10 sports. 3 were women's sports, 7 were men's sport. In the past, in any lawsuits that have gone on, cutting a women's sport has never been allowed. Once it's gone through the courts, it has always been, no, you've got to reinstate that sport because it, by having a sport already, it shows that there is an interest and abilities of the underrepresented sex. You cannot drop the women's sport. But in this situation, they went with a different philosophy. And we're going to talk about that three-part test. But they are looking to say, we need to cut 10 sports. And if we cut the 7 men's sports and the 3 women's sports, we're going to have an equitable number of athletes compared to what our student body is. And we can meet the first prong of the three-part test. We cannot continue to fund at this level, and there are more sports who want to be funded that we can't afford to bring up who are in club teams right now. We want to be more competitive within our conference. And the three women's sports was archery, fencing, and gymnastics. Archery doesn't even have an NCAA championship. Fencing, they did not have a conference. Gymnastics did not have a conference. So there was issues about competition. There was issues about travel. I'm not going to say the argument is strong, but it does have some points to it. I will give that. And so they were arguing that they could not continue. At this time, those three sports are still have been cut. The seven men's sports have been cut. But it's the first time where we're seeing it's because of one of the three parts of showing compliance of Title IX that they were able to do this. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. The third area is High School Athletic Accountability Act. The high schools at this time do not have to report revenues and expenses for their athletic teams. They have no accountability. So what is right now being proposed, part of the No Child Left Behind Act and how whatever changes are going to come to that bill, is to put in that high schools must now start to report their and disclose their gender equity based on boys' sports and girls' boys' programs and girls' programs. And I hope that goes through. I think it is the most valuable part. And at the end of our presentation today, we will show you St. Cloud State's gender equity numbers so that you can see the numbers that I collect every year. The fourth one down there is lawsuits versus EOCR complaints. There's three ways that you can bring about a complaint. You can do an in-house complaint. You can go to your athletic director. You can go to your president. You can go to the Title IX coordinator, who on our campus is Dr. Susan Moss, the Affirmative Action Title IX coordinator, and file an in-house complaint. And often things will happen, but unfortunately things take a long time. So people get a little nervous and don't think things are happening fast enough. Or it used to be the Office of Civil Rights. The Office of Civil Rights has not gone onto a campus since 2005. They have slowed down, delayed any kind of complaints that they've found. They just haven't gone very hard, very fast on any athletic complaints. And so what most people are doing now, because of that lawsuit in 92, they're filing lawsuits because they have control a little bit more, they can get monetary damages, and things happen a little bit faster. And so what I'm seeing more now as a trend is that we start to see more lawsuits than we are seeing any Office of Civil Rights complaints. The three-prong test, three-part test, I call it the three-prong, it can be both ways. We see that law, Title IX, cannot discriminate based on sex. How do you measure it? How do you determine compliance? And what it is now is there's three parts, and you must meet one of these three to be in compliance. And the first one says that proportionality. If on our campus we have 54% of the student body are women, then 54% of our athletes should be women. And 47% men on our campus, 47% men should be in athletics. If you have football, the chances of making proportionality are very hard. But that's what James Madison University was doing, is they're going to meet prong one, part one test, and they're going to make proportionality. And they're going to do roster management and only allow so many athletes on each sport, and they had it so that they were proportional to the student body. And that was a prong, the part that they were saying they were going to be in compliance with Title IX. So they may be able to get away with cutting those three women's sports, yet to be seen. Number two, history of expansion, having a history and continuing practice of expanding participation and opportunities for the underrepresented sex. And in athletics, we are talking women. A lot of schools will use this one, saying there's a history of expansion and continuing opportunities. There was a time when we could use this prong. We added soccer in 94. We added Nordic skiing in 97. We added women's hockey in 98. It's been 10 years. I don't know that we could really say we have a history of expansion anymore. We have 11 sports on our campus for women, 10 sports for men. But some schools can say, history of expansion. And a lot of schools will use that if there is a complaint filed. The third prong, third part, accommodation of interests and ability. Fully and effectively accommodating the interests and the abilities of the underrepresented sex. And this would be the prong that we'd use. This is what we would, at St. Cloud State, say, we show that we believe we have accommodated the interests and the abilities. And how do you measure that? Well, there's a couple ways. You look and say, how many club teams are there on our campus for women? Should we be offering more teams? And one of the club teams we have is crew. But then you have to look at other things and say, rowing, crew. Is there competition? Is there a conference we could be in? And that would then start to be a question. Can we accommodate as a varsity sport? At this point, we've looked at it, and I don't know that we can. So at this point, I'm not sure we'd have to. We'd certainly would. They tell us we can do surveys. We think that's a really icky way to accommodate. But in 2005, part of that commission said you can send out email surveys to your campus asking for, is there an interest in other sports? And if they do not reply, then that shows that they don't have an interest. That's a really invalid way. What we need to be doing is making sure we're looking at the local high schools, the high schools in the state, with the high schools in the region. What sports are they offering? One that may come about, I don't know how many years, maybe could be lacrosse, field hockey. Those are two sports that seem to be increasing at the high school. At this point, they're still not there, but it may be. So we would be looking at prong three. We'd look at part three and say, we think we've accommodated right now. Unfortunately, what this means is we have a men's soccer program on our campus, a very good club team. Unfortunately, they'll never be a varsity sport. Because unless we can add so many more women's sport or some other men's sports cut or whatever would cease to exist, there is no way at this point we could, under Title IX, add a men's sport. We are not in compliance in other ways that we could accommodate more men's sports at the time. And that's too bad in my eyes. That is too bad. But we have to make sure that we are also looking out for the interests and financial accountability for the women in sport. Lori.
Okay, so you realize that is a whole class that she just did. Title IX, that is a whole entire class if you came over to Hollenbeck, and she did that in very well, by the way, in 15 minutes. Lots and lots of things. When you hear Title IX, it's interesting because I'm looking out and just asking as you came in what you were here for your classes, and looking at the ages here. Jane, thank goodness you're here. Judy, thank goodness you're here. It's an interesting, because your view and our view is a little bit different. Sue told you about playing college softball, volleyball, and coaching, and I actually played in high school, but I played in the boys' teams because there weren't women's teams or girls' teams. I did by the time I was in 10th grade. By the time I was a senior, they were true all women's teams. So we are at the age of this. I played high school, I played college, and I was lucky enough to play professionally, but one of the very, very few my age. So with that, we're going to go quite quickly here because I think the questions, especially for those in the class, are the most fun. So Holly Schmidmeyer right here is the one that's doing all this. She did her master's thesis on Title IX as well. So she's the expert. Sue and I are the ones that have lived it. But she's doing a wonderful job. Anyway, 35 years of Title IX, 1972. You just heard Sue talk about that's when it came about. The reason for it is because there wasn't equal opportunity for sport. Female student athletes, it's been tremendous. The score has been tremendous. But for female athletic personnel, not so great. All right? I'm going to give you the gist of examples. So the great score. Female student athlete participation numbers have increased. The number of sports offered for female student athletes have increased. Sue kind of led into that. Now, at the high school, college, and pro levels, we have just get many, many more teams. In the state of Minnesota, there's 429. I'm going to use basketball as an example because I am the basketball coach, but 429 high schools have girls basketball teams. Across the United States, we have 9,101 athletic sport teams. I just got done telling you, I'm not that old. I know I have gray hair, but there were no teams. So in 35 years, wow, what a great score. And due to Title IX, that's 8 teams per school on an average over the nation. So we've come leaps and bounds. So our score is very good as far as a student athlete goes. Presently, the most popular sports for girls is one, basketball. So the most participants or the athletes are in basketball, number one. Number two is volleyball. Three is soccer. Number four is cross country. And five is softball. Notice the ones that are women's sports and men's sports. And then some are just female sports. Next, we have the great score. And how can I come up here and say that we have a very, very good score in participation rates and in women's athletics and in Title IX and gender equity? Well, I have a minor in statistics. I really like measurements. And on your handout, if you take your handout and it says about the components, I'll talk a little bit about those and give you the stories that I think are interesting. But these are, she talked about, you know, objective and subjective. All right, so objectively looking at the three-pronged tests is how they statistically analyze it. Well, they use these components. So what I'm going to do is, 10 years ago, well, actually 1995, a few more years than that, we had to do what she was talking about as an interest survey, and we kind of had to look at our department, and I was here for that, and how far we've come. I'm also going to give you an example for when I was in college, what happened. So I'm going to miss the first two because she's going to go over those in this last slide of our presentation, and I'm going to skip that last one, recruitment, because she's going to give you the statistics on the recruitment of our student athletes here at St. Cloud State. So I'm going to talk quickly about the others. Equipment and supplies. Well, 10 years ago we looked at all that. There were just more and better equipment for the men. And this was just 10, 12 years ago. It was to the point where when I first started, we didn't have uniforms, so we used the boys' jerseys, the old ones, the 3 years old ones. They were tight and very long. You had to wear shirts underneath them because, of course, they were, and the sleeves went down to here. Scheduling of games and practice times. Here, it was unique when I got here. The times were already set. We had a women's athletic director here when I got here and a men's athletic director, and so it was split, and it was the best school that I had ever come to. The previous schools, we did not get good times. In fact, on the scheduling of the court, we would practice on the side courts, and then my team won nine conference championships. And I still had to practice on the side court when it came down to the time. So when we went from 3 to 5 and they went from 4 to 6, that hour they got the main court. And then they got the any time extra, they got the court more times than we did. I remember playing in a, and I'm going to go way back, I remember playing in a basketball game, one of the first ones when I was a freshman, and the game went into overtime. And our men's coach, who he's an athletic director now, came out and said, you know, you'll have to stop the game because we have practice. And what an uproar. And that actually happened. I remember, I can see it as plain as day. We were playing field hockey one time, and the band had to practice on the field. The game went into overtime. We had to move to the practice field so the band could practice. That actually happened. It doesn't seem like a big deal, but that wasn't that long ago. Next, we have a number of competitive events. There was a difference there. Again, in 95, the travel and per diem allowances at St. Cloud State weren't the same. What's included with that, though, is the percentage of athletes traveling by bus and by van. It was different. The men traveled by bus more than the women. The housing, furnishing, travel. So when you stay in a motel, the men are bigger. So there were 2 men to a motel room, and there were 4 women, because women were smaller. But we've come a long way. We don't have any of this. We have a lot of athletes right here. I know there's some hockey players over there, basketball players over here, and I'm not sure what other, but we don't have these things. Look at how far we've come. The length of stay before and after competition. The men were staying the night after, drive back in the morning, where the women had to leave right away. Tutoring. The men had tutors. I remember when I first got here, and the women didn't. We have that now. It's all equal. Coaching. Office space, a men's office compared to the, not men's, the male coaches or the men's team's coaches, office space was interesting. That was an interesting one to see, and how fast, quickly that changed. Types of classes that the coaches taught. The women coaches, I think Dr. Becker here, she taught everything because she's extremely bright, and then her counterparts didn't teach anything. extra duty days, how to pay the males more was to give them extra duty days, and locker rooms was next. The locker rooms were definitely different. I remember coming here, and they were definitely different between not just, you can't go, and she mentioned, you can't go by sport. You have to go by the whole program. Well, the difference of the men's team's locker rooms versus the women's team's locker rooms. But in 12 years, look at how much we've changed. Medical and training facilities and services. We traveled with student trainers, the males traveled with certified athletic trainers. And it's all coming. Housing and dining facilities, pre-game meals were unheard of for women's teams. Publicity. St. Cloud State's always been great at this because our head of our sports information is a female. And I've always, since I've come here 14 years ago, had equal men's and women's basketball as far as the media guides and as far as all that kind of publicity. The problem there, though, is the billboards used to be all male-dominated, not for the females. Possibility of traveling was a little bit different. Support services. Pep band and the cheerleaders would only cheer for the men. They wouldn't cheer for the women. Work-study staffing, and then recruitment we'll go over later. So as far as the objectives, so those components, that's how you can see the differences and how far we've come. The score is great. Subjective. The perception of females has changed dramatically. You know, our male or female athletes walk across this campus. It's not degrading to be a female athlete as it was years and years ago. Next, not such a great score. When we talked about the decline of female athletic personnel, four areas. There's less and less athletic administrators, very few Subecers. And if there is a Subecer on campus, it's usually one in that whole office as a female. Two is coaching. Very few females going into coaching. Athletic training positions at the head, not very many. Sports information, the same. And number two, I will leave for Sue as well because that's she'll go over when she goes over these lists. So some of the facts. In all sports, in 1972, 90 to 100% of the women's teams and programs were coached and administrated by females. Today, less than one out of two coaches for the women's teams are female. 98 out of 100 of the men's teams are all male. One out of five athletic directors is a female. One out of five head athletic trainer is a female. One out of 10 head sports information directors is a female. Three out of 10 females employed in intercollegiate athletics is a head coach. So take basketball, for instance. The conference that we're going into this next year, St. Cloud State, we're going into a new conference. There's 10 teams. In women's basketball, out of those 10 teams, one coach is a female, nine males. So we're not scoring really well in the coaching field and in the administration. And we have some slides on it. If someone wants a question or asks a question, why is this? What is the cause of the decline? We can certainly go into it, but it's we wanted to be upbeat here. We don't want to sometimes bring in the negative. All right, so from here, the NCAA, this is just another quote, but in Division II basketball, there's 289 member schools that have women's basketball teams. In Division II, we have the lowest amount of females coaching. So 47% of those teams have a female head coach. So out of the 289 coaches, if you figure that out, only four of those female head coaches have children. So that's a definite cause of why we don't have a lot of females, because the chance to have children and be a head coach are not very good because the statistics show it. With that, I'm going to let her finish because I think the best two slides are coming up, and that's our facts and figures. So I'm going to let it back to Sue, and then we'll come back for questions.
On some of the facts that Lori's given, pretty dismal for women coaches, pretty dismal for women administrators. You know, and unfortunately, Title IX does not say anything in there in any of the 13 components that a woman has to coach a woman's team. They worry about the student athletes. They worry about coaching opportunities, but they don't worry about is a woman coaching a women's sport. And unfortunately, we're still in a society where our student athletes would prefer to have a male coach often. Male coaches know more, even if they don't. The perception is there that male coaches know more. Something that needs to change, it's got to continue to change. St. Cloud State, we have 11 women's sports. Five of the coaches are women. 45%, 45.5%. On our men's side, we have 10 sports. 9 of the 10 coaches are male. We have one female coaching golf and coaches both men's golf and women's golf. So we're not in great shape there. We have a female who is our head athletic trainer. Anne Beck in our office, in the audience here, is our head athletic media relations director. We have women in good administrative positions, but it's not good enough. We have to keep doing more, but that's not where Title IX helps us. That's where gender equity comes into place. That's where we talk about the environment, the climate, that we've got to keep pushing that women are representative in the administrative, in the coaching areas as well. And that is going to be very important as we continue the fight to keep Title IX. Title IX is about the monetary awards given to men's and women's programs, but we can't lose sight that we've got to continue to have women have a say in what's going on. The data from St. Cloud State. This is what a lot of people like to know. So what I did is I went back last year's, because I just did the report. It was due in January. So the 2007 is last year's numbers. 2002 would have been 5 years ago. 1997 would be 10 years. So you can get a little bit of perspective, but it's a snapshot in each of these years. And one of the things, whether you can understand this or not, is it's not what's budgeted, it's what's spent. Most of the time, our coaches are spending all their money because they don't have enough. Very simply, in our programs, we have some deficiencies. It is very clear. If we look at student populations, you can kind of get an idea that overall, we are somewhere around 53% women on this campus, undergraduates, and somewhere between 45 and 47% males. So that should be, if we are trying to meet proportionality, that's what we should have in the athlete percentage. As you see, that doesn't hold. We would never meet prong one or part one of that three-part test. We have 60% of our athletes are males and 40% overall are females. I gave you how many total athletes it also has underneath there. But we've got to do better. But what we have to be worried about and we can't do is add too many more women athletes to the women's sports, because you can't have 40 on the women's basketball team and 20 on the men's basketball team and thinking they're getting the same coaching opportunities. That's just not fair. It's not right. So we always have to take in a number of considerations, and it is hard. I'm not trying to give an excuse here. It is hard to meet proportionality when you have football and we're talking 110 guys. You would need, we do not have sports on the women's side that have larger numbers that could, so it'll take 3, 4, 5 teams to compensate for football. And so we really do have a problem there. We would not meet prong one. Scholarships. Scholarships have really come a long ways, and I'm really happy to see that now of the 13 components, it used to be 11 components that you looked at for Title IX, and scholarships wasn't one of them. Now they've made it one of the top three that you look at, because athletic scholarships are critical. One of the things we know as coaches is that women don't stay around on teams if they're not getting athletic scholarships and if they're not playing. It is just a different environment, and we've got to do a better job at St. Cloud State on scholarships. That is very clear. Scholarships is something that athletics has to raise. And so when we talk about our discrepancies in Title IX in the athletic program, there are places where athletics has to do a better job. But there's also places where it's institutionally driven and that we need a better and more of a commitment from our institution potentially. But we have scholarships. We're at 55 males, 45 females. As you see by its student population, we're off. We need to do a better job. We're 7-8 percentage points off there that we've got to continue to work on. Now, next year, that may change a little bit because we go into a new conference and the football program has to reduce their scholarships just because of conference regulations. So, again, we'll see over the next couple of years some changes. Some will be conference-driven and some are going to be coming from our athletic program. But last year we spent $1.2 million on scholarships, and that had to be raised by athletics. That is not given by institutional aid. I think we, in different things, we probably got about $100,000 in institutional aid to go towards scholarships. But this is something that we have to raise, $1.2 million in scholarships last year. Recruiting. The recruiting budget is actually what it is there. That, again, should be proportional. 63.6% of the recruiting budget goes to males. To our men's sports, 35.4% go to the women's budget. Now, I don't know how it is on every other program or other institutions, but at St. Cloud State, operating expenses, the operating budget, and the recruiting budget are tied together. They're one budget, of which our coaches have to spend for uniforms, for travel, and for recruiting. It all comes out of one budget, and this budget comes from student government. And unfortunately, we're not fully funded, and that is just the way it is. And so our coaches often do with less than other conference schools do. That doesn't mean we can't make it work and do more. But when you look at our recruiting budgets, again, the men are spending more money on recruiting than our women's programs. Again, operating budgets. This is team travel. This is equipment. This is uniforms. This is everything to do with the programs. And again, you see across the years that we've gotten better. You see that the percentages are getting better, but they're not there yet. And we can't be satisfied. They're not there yet. But this is where I come back and say, this is an institutional commitment, of which athletics is part of and must make the commitment as well. But we need to start working on increasing operating budgets so that we have better recruiting budgets. Last one I just wanted to show is revenues. So you can see this would be like season tickets, any kind of guarantees, any revenue that would be coming in based on sports. And again, our women are catching up. They're having a larger share of the revenue, and we had to increase that. And the frustration today yet is we do not see the same number of people going to our women's sports as we see going to their men's sports. As frustrating as it is, the difference between men's hockey and women's hockey is night and day, unfortunately. And we just have to keep working on it, and maybe it's working with our youth sports so that we generate a whole new generation of people who recognize women's sports. Because right now, if you watch our teams, you watch our women's basketball team, they're incredible. They're talented. It's a great game to watch. And so we need to keep trying to get people to come to the games. Because the media says, well, we don't, why should we report on it if nobody's reading it? And the catch-22 is people say, well, if it's not in the paper, it must not be important. And so you go back and forth. But I think, you know, even probably in the last 5, 6, 7 years, the media press coverage has been much better. Not good yet. Women's basketball team wins a game, and they're on the third page of the sports page. They should have been on the first page. They should have been a front page. It doesn't happen all the time. And so we got to keep working on it, and it just keeps, we need to be active. We need to be vocal along those lines. Questions? Jane?
Okay, one question I have.
Incentives to ask questions. Very different. And some of it is, you know, when I give talks on Title IX or we talk about gender equity in classes, the young athletes look and say, that really happened? Really? And that's great. I think that is so neat that our young athletes can't even comprehend that they would not have prime practice time. They can't comprehend that they would not get scholarships. They can't comprehend that there was such discrimination going on. I think that's great. On the other side, I think for those that came through when it was hard, when we had to really work, we had to almost beg to get, the love of the game was really there. You played for the love of the game. You wanted to play because you were being ostracized for playing the sport. You were being degraded, and yet you really wanted to play the game. It was the love of the game, and you practiced whenever you wanted to. I mean, you practiced at 6:30 in the morning because you could. Nowadays, I think there's a little bit a sense of entitlement. And part of me says that's wonderful. That is absolutely wonderful. But I don't always see the love of the game coming out quite as strong. It doesn't mean it's not there. It's just not in the same way. The athletes are absolutely more talented, more skilled, been playing longer. So those are things that I see. Lori. Answer first, then you answer your part. I'll answer first, then I'll let Lori. But why aren't we having women coaches, women administrators? And here's how I come, and Lori's got some other very good information. Salaries. The salaries now are competitive. It is a good salary to coach women's sports. It is a comparable salary to coach women's sports compared to the men's sports. On our campus, we're a union school. It's based, you know, it's a good salary. Where we talk about in the 70s where the women were coaching two and three, coaching the sports, 90% of the coaches were coaching. Well, you know what? Those women were teaching full-time and volunteering to coach two and three sports. The men didn't want to coach it. There was no value at that time. So that's how I see it. Now, women still aren't allowed to coach the men's sport, except in very rare tennis, golf, some of the other sports. But not in the big sports. You don't see the women coaching there yet. But it's okay for men to cross over and coach women's sports. And now with salaries, it's a great job. And there's a lot of people out there who want to coach. But Lori's got some more information that I think also helps.
Well, Holly will put up the list. I'm not going to read it, so you can read it. And I think they all make sense, but I'll jump down to a few. Failure for females to apply for job openings. We had a soccer search. She was just named today, or I think she's going to be named this afternoon. There were 35 applicants. There were only 3 women in the pool. How many of those males played on the women's soccer team? You know, none. We have our soccer players and our basketball players and our hockey players that aren't going into coaching because of all kinds of reasons. So we do have a lack of people applying. Time constraints played on females due to family duties, I think, is what you're getting to as far as the kids go. I am one of the 4. I have 2 children. I'm only 4. I'm in every survey. I have probably every week I have at least 1 survey to fill out. It got up to as high as 10. I remember when I had my daughter, that was my 2nd child, there were 10 coaches out of the 289 that had children. I'm on every single I answer them only because I think the statistics are overwhelming, but it's a time constraint. And then I think you have to go back to the very first one, the old boys network, and the lack of the female network. There's so few out there. So we started with, in 72, they were all women. We had men's and women's athletic departments, and now we have 1 athletic department, and usually at the head is a male. So it's frightening. And so you can look at some of those things. The other thing is that it's hard. You know, a lot of things happen on a golf course. So do women play a lot of golf? Well, a lot of athletic women do play golf, but once there's kids involved, I'll give the example. We played the University of South Dakota. This will be my last one, then we'll have to take another question. Played the University of South Dakota. I sat down with the assistant coach. She's done this year. She has two children, and she said, you know, Laurie, I can't do it anymore. And I said, why, Becky? You're so good, and your head coach is leaving. You could have this job. She says, I can't do it anymore. I have the men's assistant. We will have a function, and we'll get done with our job, and we're leaving the door, and he'll say, hey, I have two more hours that my kids are going to be at daycare, so I'm going to run and go play a game of golf. Where she's the assistant women's coach, she's going to go home and spend time with her kids. I think it's a mindset. I think that if you get that example, it's women look at things differently, and so it's hard to survive in this world. But it's a fun occupation, so don't deter from it. Any other questions? Man, I got a lot of balls here. Oh, yes.
I don't know that it will because of employment law. Employment law says you can't discriminate based on sex, and you can't make the goal of, you know, we used to in 95 with a previous president, he had the goal for affirmative action was hire a woman for the women's sports. But that also was being contested in some lawsuits. So I don't know that we'll ever get to the point where we say women should be coaching women, unfortunately. I think we should, but I don't think the legal system will allow us.
On the other hand, it seems like a positive side of that picture is things are trending. The trends are in favor of more and more participation, more and more equity. So for women athletes who want a future in athletic education, there's going to be a lot of opportunity.
Yep. And one of the nice things, as much as I was browbeating the NCAA, they really have changed their tune in the number of years, and now there are a lot of enhancements and internships for minorities and women. They're really pushing that they want minority coaches and they want women coaches, so there is a trend within the NCAA to continue to encourage that, but there's no teeth to it. I think in football right now, they require that in new searches at the Division I level, that football administrations must interview a minority candidate. So they have put some things in, but it's not strong enough.
Can you stick around for a couple of minutes if people have other check-ins and they want it, come up and get it?